Here we go. Chris Collinsworth podcast, along with the great one, Steve Palazzolo, part of the PFF NFL podcast to billions and billions of listeners every single week that is the dominant force of PFF. Steve, how you doing, man?
Doing great. We've moved up to billions. That's great. It's
billions.
That's good. Yeah. Used to be millions. Yeah. We're moving on, though. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Trillions. I've got that. After that, I'm not sure what comes after that. So we'll get ready for that. But it's a, so how's your arm doing after the pitching that the Sam and that was beautiful. In so many ways, absolutely brilliant. Taking him out there in the dark and trying to have some guy who's never picked up a baseball bat and throwing pitches 7 yards outside the home plate. All that was brilliant. I just got to say.
Yeah, the perfect time of day, right? Right as the sun's going down. I had to get my warm-ups in and take it right to the dark. But yeah, it took me, it was like a week to recover because I haven't pitched off a mound in probably 6 or 7 years. And yeah, it was, it's one of those things where your body, you know, your brain saying do it and your body just doesn't respond the same way it used to. So the velocity wasn't exactly there, and it hurt. It hurt for a few days, muscle soreness, but it was fun.
Honestly, I was kind of hoping you would miss inside as much as you missed outside in that thing.
I was afraid to hit him.
You don't understand the game of baseball until you've been hit. You don't get it. There's no way you can understand baseball. And I think back to some of the old days with Jim Bunning and Bob Gibson and some of those guys. If you got anywhere close to the plate, they were throwing at your face, not at your head. They were throwing at your face. Baseball evolved, right? I mean, it really did. It kind of became, you're going to do that. I'm taking this big bat out to the pitcher's mound and I'm beating you over the head with it. But it's such a different game now, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the old school approach. Throw one up and in and, you know, back guys off the plate. But it is, I mean, it is crazy in baseball, you know, like 17-inch plate, how different the ball looks inside versus outside. And like Sam was saying, when I actually threw one down the middle, it almost surprised him. It looked like it was probably way inside because I'd been missing outside so much. But yeah, he said he wasn't afraid to get hit by me, and I don't blame him. I was throwing 74, so it probably wouldn't have hurt. So next time we do it, I'll go backing, but my ball runs in on him and everything. That's why I was a little too cautious about hitting him.
I'm ready for the rematch. I'm ready for part two.
Here's in the light, hopefully.
Yeah, we'll try it in the light next time. So many interesting things happening. Probably among the most interesting was the game last night, because I think everybody had a little sense of Arizona's got the best record, but are they really real? Is this matter? And yet, once again, at home, they can't come up with the goods against a Rams team that was missing a ton of people, and they sort of brought Matthew Stafford back to life again.
They did, and look, this was one of those games. I joke about it all the time. There are 2, 3, 4 games a year where Matthew Stafford looks like a top 3 quarterback. And early in the year, even though he had the best stats in the league, he had not had that game yet. Even week 1, Sunday Night Football, he put up all those stats against, you know, when you guys were there against the Bears and everything. But, you know, there's a busted coverage, and it's like a free 68-yarder, whatever it was. He had not played at this level until Monday night. That was the first time we actually saw that from Stafford. And it's a completely different Rams team. You don't need Jalen Ramsey. You don't need the other guys that they were missing if Matthew Stafford's playing like that. You know, he was incredible. And not just incredible, it, you know, hits the bomb for 51 through the air and all that stuff, but like the no-look stuff and just the feel, Cooper Kupp on the deep crossing route and all that. I mean, when Stafford plays like that, like that's the game you get Matthew Stafford for. It doesn't matter about the other stuff. But yeah, I think it showed, hey, the Rams, they're not dead yet. They went through that slump, but they're right there in the thick of it with the Cardinals, with the Cowboys, and all those other teams that are, you know, near the top of the NFC.
Now, we're coming down to the divisional play part of the football season, right? Because they sort of backload a lot of those divisional games. And now's basically when this whole thing is going to get decided. So, but we've got the Packers and the Bucks. Sort of sitting on top of it, this thing right now. Same two teams that were in the championship game a season ago. The Packers, in many ways, are really compelling because of all the guys that they're about to get back from injuries and Bakhtiari, and I'm not going to get Elgton Jenkins back, but some of the guys on the other side of the ball as well, Jair Alexander coming back, Za'Darius Smith coming back. And if they all sort of hit at the same time and go ripping into the playoffs, and Aaron Rodgers gets, you know, his starting center back, for goodness sakes. I mean, across, I think they've got one starter left on that offensive line as they were playing the other night. Is it possible the Green Bay Packers, with a bunch of backups, nobody's recognizing how good this team has been to be on top now? And what are they going to be when those guys start coming back?
Yeah, I mean, so I think this year this Packers team is more impressive as a team probably than they were last year. Whereas last year, I think the overall package of the team, because Aaron Rodgers was playing at a different level last year, even, you know, compared to this year. Davante Adams, you know, not hurt at all last year and just playing at a different level. Jair Alexander was our highest graded corner last year. They were kind of top heavy last season. They had more of the flash with, you know, scoring over 30 points a game and Rodgers being unstoppable and Davante being unstoppable. But this year, they've won games when Aaron Rodgers wasn't at his best. They've won games with defense. They've won games with, you know, slowing it down and running the ball and all that stuff. They won that game in Arizona on Thursday night when they didn't have anybody because of COVID and all that stuff. So to me, that's the most more impressive thing about the Packers. And then all the guys you mentioned coming back, yeah, they're dangerous. And now the Packers, over at PFF.com, fifth easiest schedule remaining. Now the Bucs have the easiest schedule remaining, but there's a good chance both teams win out, end up going 14-3, which is, you know, still weird saying those 17 game schedule records, but they're both sitting there at 14-3 and the Packers have the tiebreaker. It might be that the NFC goes through Lambeau again and they're set up with, you know, some of these stars still coming back. So I think it's looking good for the Packers right now.
You know, you go back a season ago and it was the deep ball to Scotty Miller by Tampa right before the half that really turned that game around. And then you go out and you get Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator, who's of the ilk. Now, they have given up some deep balls, but of the ilk of, we're going to play that Rams, Vic Fangio, not let you get behind us, shell kind of defense. And maybe the way they play offense, that if you just don't give up two or three big plays the game, that's enough for Aaron Rodgers and company, because they look like they can score on anybody right now.
It is. And then you got Rasul Douglas, you know, completely rejuvenated.
Go,
you know,
like, figure.
Right? I mean, so when he came out of West Virginia, you know, they played a ton of off coverage at West Virginia. They never played press man or anything, but he always had that big press man type of body. But he is comfortable jumping underneath routes like he has, like he did on Justin Fields, like he did on Matthew Stafford. You know, that's what he's been doing all season. He'll get burnt every now and again, but there's a scheme fit there with Rasul Douglas. And this was the biggest question mark. When Scotty Miller, that deep ball that you talked about, that was against Kevin King on the outside. Kevin King, in last year's scheme with Green Bay, Kevin King struggled. He struggled a lot opposite the best corner in the NFL, and it was kind of easy to attack him. I think Green Bay's kind of mitigated that a little bit with better personnel, different scheme, and all that stuff. So it is, it's definitely a different secondary for the Packers this year.
So I'm watching Tampa Bay tape right now. We're getting ready to do them against the Saints, and the Saints have owned these guys, right? Whether Tom Brady's there or not, it's been unbelievable. They even beat them this year in a game that Jameis Winston got hurt, and they still lost the game. Tom Brady had a couple of interceptions. He had a fumble. You know, it's one of his worst games of the season. But they're a team that I find so interesting on defense, because they come out in the first half against the Buffalo Bills, and they're lining up, and I swear there's either six or seven guys at the line of scrimmage on every snap. And I'll be damned if I have any idea which of the four of them are gonna rush. And I mean, right down to on one play, I think it was Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh that dropped back into coverage as they brought both slot corners off of the outside. So this is a team willing to take chances with the athletes to take chances and to come after them. And those two interior linebackers, you know, Levante David, Devin White, they can cover up some of the, you know, the holes that exist if you want to play some of that zone drop defense. Now they got Richard Sherman in there playing some safety as well. So this is a team that went on a run defensively, obviously great in the Super Bowl last year, but defensively, you know, you go, all right, how would they match up against the Packers? This will be pretty good.
Yeah, they did pretty well against Aaron Rodgers last year. Remember the game early in the season in Tampa Bay was Rodgers' worst game of the season.
Oh, and then, yeah.
Rodgers was good in the NFC Championship last year. But, yeah, again, it was the Bucs went on a run where they made just enough plays. I mean, adding Joe Tryon-Shoyinka to that front with Shaq Barrett, with Jason Pierre-Paul, what you just described is kind of like that old-school Steelers front, right, where it's like, all right, they're not going to bring seven or eight, but they're going to bring five. They're going to bring four from odd places. They are going to mix it up, and they've got that versatility with all those players. I mean, Devin White is one of the better blitzing linebackers. He had a sack the other day. That dude is so fast. He'll be out of position a little bit in the run game and some other areas, but they do have a lot of flexibility up front. And they have also, you talk about the Packers getting guys back. I mean, the Bucs have had a ton of secondary issues. All of those guys banged up at some point. Now Sherm coming back, Carlton Davis coming back in recent weeks, Murphy Bunting coming back a few weeks ago. They're starting to get to full strength in that Tampa Bay secondary too, which I think certainly bodes well for them in this, you know, this stretch run here.
Yeah, and then offensively, Antonio Brown comes back, and there's a million different things that people are, I'm sure, going to say about him when he does come back. But from a pure football standpoint, there is no doubt. You cannot argue the point that Antonio Brown in the lineup a season ago, they were a different team. I mean, he improved the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, despite the fact they have really good receivers as it is.
Yeah, it's just about having answers to what the defense, you know, throws at you, right? And not having – it's kind of the opposite of what the Packers have been, where it's like, hey, no matter what you do, we're going to find a way to get Devontae Adams open. We'll move him around. We'll for the Bucs, it's like, hey, this week it's a Mike Evans week. It's a Chris Godwin week. It's an Antonio Brown week. It's a Gronk week. I mean, those guys are all absolute stars. And then there's other games where it's like Brady will just sit there and check down to Leonard Fournette 8 or 10 times and let him move the ball. So it's to me, it's always about having those – answers for what the defense is throwing at you. So yeah, obviously when Antonio Brown gets back, and Bruce Arians said, we don't know what we're going to do with him yet, right, essentially. But if he's back as part of the lineup, there'll be a game where Antonio Brown is the guy. There'll be another game where it's Mike Evans or it's Godwin. So it's just, you know, more weapons for Brady and answers for what defenses throw at them.
For the most part, Brady still has 2 or 3 yards of step up room in front of them. This offensive line, I think, is underrated. From what I've seen of them, unless you're bringing some legitimate pressure, which creates some one-on-ones with the wide receivers, it is really hard to break through that offensive line. I mean, they look fantastic in the game the other day. The team that we have not spent a ton of time on in the NFC, the Dallas Cowboys. And it's amazing because I always spend a ton of time on the Dallas Cowboys. If you're in broadcasting, you do, you know, 3 games a year every year. So we always know a bunch about them. But is this team now starting to come together a little bit under Dan Quinn on the defensive side? We know what Micah Parsons is doing. He's probably, I think the betting odds now have him as the third favorite, not to win Defensive Rookie of the Year, to win Defensive Player of the Year. And I think Lawrence Taylor was the last person that ever did that. Are we seeing an uptick on the defense? Because in the beginning, Dak Prescott in the offense was the number one offense. Maybe they still are. I don't know. But now Dak has taken a little downturn, it seems like.
Yeah, Dak definitely seems like he's in a slump. But do you view this as this bodes well for Dallas? Because if Dak played as poorly as he did Sunday, and even, to be honest, the Thursday night game against the Saints, Thanksgiving, Dak wasn't all that good. He's kind of in a bit of a slump. He's made some special throws over the last few weeks, but he's in a slump. But last year, before Dak got hurt, remember, it was like defense couldn't stop anybody. They're scoring 30-plus points a game. And it's like if Dak doesn't have a great game, they've got no shot. It kind of bodes well for Dallas that they have other options, right? As far as winning, they can win with defense. They can win with this pass rush. You know, just looking at our grades, DeMarcus Lawrence only played 127 snaps, but he's got a 90 grade. He's got a history of grading really well. It's him, Randy Gregory, and then Micah Parsons. Just as far as overall grades, pass rush grades, it's Parsons, who's just been absolutely special. And nobody's ever done what Parsons has done, gone from linebacker to edge the way he has. The fact that those three guys are the top three and they're all healthy and back and all that stuff, I mean, that is a tough trio to handle as far as pass blocking up front. There's a lot of creativity. And yeah, Dallas can win with defense more than ever. Now, they're a little turnover driven. Trevon Diggs has all those interceptions and all that. But certainly, if you came into the season and said, hey, if Dallas is just an average defense, they have all those explosive playmakers, they got Dak Prescott, that's enough. And I think they're certainly there and beyond, especially with the pass rush and all the turnovers that they can create.
Today, if I said today, you can have the Cardinals, you can have the Cowboys, or you can have the Rams going into the playoffs, which one of those three would you take?
Man, I would probably lean Cowboys. I don't want to completely not buy into the Cardinals. I mean, I know they had the best record until Monday night and all that stuff. I just think they've overachieved, right? They're a really good team. Love what they've done on the defensive side of the ball with a cornerback situation that didn't look great on paper coming in, all that stuff. I've never been a full believer in the Cardinals. I think they're good. The Rams, I think that midseason lull means something. You know, I think they are susceptible. But I do think the Cowboys might have the best all-around team because they're explosive on offense. They can win with the run game, win with the pass game, and then everything we just mentioned defensively.
Unbelievable, though, that somebody in the NFC right now, and right now it's Washington with a 6-7 record, is definitely getting in. You know, I mean, yeah. there's no question. And the list is a long list of 6-7 teams. You go Washington, Minnesota, Philadelphia, Atlanta,
it's all 6-7 teams,
New Orleans. Those are all the 6-7 teams. So, I mean, we've got a dogfight coming out of here. Let's flip it over a little bit to the AFC now. The Patriots, God only knows how they're doing it. You're a Patriots guy. You grew up in that area. You know everything about them. And as much as we want to jump all over Mac Jones and the job that he's done and best rookie and quarterback and all that, he threw three passes in the game, in the game that they won. So this football team is really so much more than the quarterback position, and the sheer brute force of that offensive line in this running game, is something to be admired. I mean, it really is.
So I think if you take a step back at a high level and say, okay, the Patriots are 9-4, and even though it happened in a weird way, like they start 2-4 and then win every game since that point, you take it back at a high level and say, okay, what did the Patriots do well last year? They could still run the ball the way they are this year, right? They still had that power. Cam Newton was the guy under center, but they had so many games last year where they just couldn't throw the ball, where Cam Newton's stat line was like, you know, he's throwing for 50 yards and 48 yards and all that stuff. So now there are games where Mac Jones does just enough to win. Forget the three passes for a minute. But there's other games where Mac Jones, they had to rely on him. There's other games where they rely on the run game. Now, Buffalo, of course, was the extreme. You're relying on Bill Belichick and coaching and all that stuff. And then the defense has been so much better. And I think if you look back to this offseason, investing $500 million in free agents this offseason, but being able to do that because you have no more Tom Brady on your salary cap. You have a rookie contract quarterback, or Cam Newton was the guy, you know, that they had under contract when they made all those moves. They're getting their money's worth from not all of those guys, but like the collective of Matthew Judon and Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith and Kendrick Bourne's been fantastic. All those guys that they paid, they upgraded their team. They can win in the pass game. They can win with defense. This is like my consistent theme. Can you win all these different ways in the NFL? That has to be the answer, right? Because there's no dominant teams. You got to have different ways to win. The Patriots certainly have that this year, in part because rookie quarterback contract and then all the guys that they brought in this offseason.
Yeah, and I can already hear people going, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? The Kansas City Chiefs just scored 40-something points. They've broken out of their offensive slump, albeit against the Raiders, who
again,
the Raiders are going to play that three deep or that Seattle three no matter what. So they don't care what the data may say.
That's my question for you, Chris, because I think this is – you talk about trends in the NFL and everything. Has there ever been a more clear trend – and okay, when you play the Chiefs and Mahomes, you got to play it a certain way. Not every snap or anything, but you just make him be patient, right? Play too high and all that stuff. Our defense is equipped to do that. Like the Raiders might have just said, "Well, we do what we do, right? We're gonna play single high. We have to do it." Do today's NFL defenses have to be able to, you know, adjust from week to week, because clearly the Raiders are not, and they got torched twice in 4 weeks.
Well, I think that's what makes great teams great. I'm always interested in teams that look bad in September, because my theory is, and the Patriots are no exception. They always, to me, look bad in September. They just look like they're getting it going. And I always thought the same thing, that they look bad because they don't do anything well yet, you know, but they're going to do everything on defense. They're going to play every personnel in every position. They're going to move defensive linemen. They're going to have inside linebackers rushing on the edge. They're going to have safeties playing man coverage in the box. They're going to do everything, and they're not going to do any of it well until about November. And then by the time we get to January, they're going to do everything well. And the flip side of that are teams that this is what we do, and this is what we play, and we're going to get better at what we do, and we're going to know all the little nuances of that. So, you know, I think obviously one's a lot easier to coach, you know, when you just go, this is what we do. We're going to play it every day. We're going to get good at it. The hard one to me is always, we're going to play everything, and we're going to find out what every single player on this team is capable of doing, so that when it gets right down to it and we have to win a game like the Patriots had to win against the Buffalo Bills the other night, they can throw it three times. And the diversity of the offense literally is, we're going to run it inside or we're going to run it outside. That's it. They beat them. You know, I mean, it was truly one of the great performances. And Bill Belichick, give him credit. But when you see Adam Schefter getting blown off his chair in pregame, you understand that, you know, it was going to be a rough night. But they make it work in conditions and in ways that other teams fail.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to me because, yeah, you need to have the ability to win all those different ways. I just wonder how many defenses – is it as simple as, oh, the way to beat the Chiefs is too high. The way to beat the Bills is too high. We're just going to do that this week, even if you need the coaches, right? Is it just the Belichick factor? Is he one of the few coaches that can actually pull that off, you know? It seems like a trend right now, though.
I think the answer to that is highly likely. You know, there may be others that might be able to do it, but we know he can do it.
Football fans, we all love an action-packed, high-scoring NFL game, but with a no-brainer from DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, you'll be there once a single point is scored. New customers bet just one on any team to score can win $100 in free bets. It's just that simple. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the NFL action. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes, and all with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code PFF, and bet $1 on any team to score and win $100 in free bets. If they score, you score with promo code PFF. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customers, minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do you want a chance to win the ultimate game day feast? Whether it's football success or financial savvy, winning starts with asking us questions. Now, would you like to know what it's like behind the scenes with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football? Or how about a need to know for your financial future? Now you can ask either or both, whatever you want to do. Every football or financial question you ask earns you a chance to win a catered party for February's big game, and we know what that is. PFF will throw a party for up to $2,500 for the big game for you and 25 of your guests. How about that? And the winner can choose whatever food you want. So you chicken wings, you want whatever. Sushi, some of you will be sushi people. This week's question comes from Julie in Florida. And what is the most memorable win or loss in your playing career? I can remember a few more losses than wins. I think the most memorable win, because we lost the two Super Bowls, was probably the AFC Championship game in my rookie year. because it was the freeze bowl. It was 59 below zero wind chill. I was in my rookie year out of the University of Florida, had no business on the field that particular day. The most memorable loss, obviously we lost two times to San Francisco in the Super Bowl, but I had one in college as well. The Lindsey Scott game, in which we had Georgia beat. They had the ball on their own 7-yard line. We're up, I don't know what, but only like 50 seconds to go in the game. And they threw a pass to Lindsey Scott directly in the middle of the field. He turned and went untouched up their sideline for the game-winning touchdown. And that was Herschel Walker. That was the year that Georgia went on to win the national championship. But the only reason they did was because they came up with one of the most miraculous plays of all time. I always say if he'd come down our sideline, I would have tackled him or at least slowed him down. So there it is. That's it. My favorites and some of my least favorites. Submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris. One more time, that is westernsouthern.com/askchris, and Chris is C-R-I-S, not H. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, with Western and Southern, you can rest assured on game day. Right now, you can get 25% off any PFF subscription if you use code Collinsworth. There you go, Collinsworth. Grades and data are live for every single player who logged a snap last week. And what do you get with a PFF subscription? All of PFF's locked article content. Bango, you get that. PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards, you get that. Our grade-powered projections, cover probabilities, and betting values, you get that. 0 to 100 grades on every single player, including the top rookies on every team, you're going to get that. Player prop tool, which shows plus minus values for every NFL prop. So you probably make billions and billions of dollars and so much more. And as always, please support the podcast. Use promo code Collinsworth for 25% off any sub. We thank you. So the Tennessee Titans, are the Tennessee Titans just getting Derrick Henry back away from being right back, or is this just, you know, this, because I feel like they've kind of dropped off the radar screen almost a little bit, right? They've been, what are they going to be back the minute that he comes back?
So they're dropping off in part because they lost back-to-back games, of course. So they lost in New England, but they also, you know, they just played Jacksonville. Like they were a couple weeks, as of a couple weeks ago, had like the easiest schedule for the rest of the season. I don't know if Henry's going to be able to make it back. I do think more and more the way we talk at PFF, running backs don't matter, all that stuff, right? Henry matters for that team, not just for what he does, but what, you know, running the ball, but of course what he brings to the offense, how much respect he demands from the defense. Like they do legitimately account for Derrick Henry. That does give Ryan Tannehill those one-on-ones on the outside. And Tennessee's had so many injuries in an offense that's supposed to rely on A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. They don't have either of those guys. They don't have Derrick Henry. Now, if they were all healthy, yeah, they're as dangerous as ever. I don't know if Henry can make it back, but even if it's Julio and A.J. Brown, if they could do just enough in the run game to get defenses to respect him, you still have those two big dudes on the outside. Tannehill's been very good these last couple of years. I think Tennessee's dangerous, but they've definitely lost a little luster after you go through that stretch where they beat the Bills and the Chiefs, the Colts, the Rams, the Saints. I mean, what an incredible stretch. And they did it with all those injuries, but they just ran out of gas, you know, against the Texans and then the Patriots. So that's why I think they're losing a little bit of that hype, but they're still sitting there at 9-4. I think they're dangerous if they're a little bit healthier for the playoffs.
Yeah, it's the other team. Speaking of dangerous, the team I would not want to play in the first round of the playoffs is the Indianapolis Colts. There's something about the physical nature of that team, that offensive line, their ability to turn around to Jonathan Taylor and make something special out of next to nothing. I think they are truly built, despite the fact that they're a dome team, they are truly built to go on the road and beat anybody in the AFC. I don't think there's one team out there that I would go, they don't have a chance against that thing.
Yeah, like the Buffalo game, right? 41-15. And, you know, Sam always jokes on our podcast, the Bills are only equipped to beat the Chiefs. You know, like the Bills spent their whole offseason saying, how do we beat the Chiefs? But now the AFC is filled with teams like the Patriots and then the Colts, who run the ball like crazy, and the Bills are not equipped to do that, right? So the Colts do have, I can't believe how many points they're scoring. Like, if you told me before the season, I think they're third in points per game or whatever, I am shocked by that, because it didn't look like the greatest group of playmakers. Michael Pittman's emerged. I knew Jonathan Taylor's good, but he has been fantastic. You thought they'd have a good offensive line. They started slow because of all the injuries, but they've been great in recent weeks. So they're really coming together. And it's not like Carson Wentz is playing incredible football. He's playing fine. You know, he's taking care of the ball and everything. But it's just a whole bunch of good that the Colts have offensively. A whole bunch of good that is added up to very, very good as far as the production goes between the line, Taylor, Wentz, Pittman stepping up. And so, yeah, I think the Colts are absolutely dangerous. That should be a great game with the Patriots, too. At home, Saturday night, you know, that should be a great one. Another test for the Colts to see, you know, just how dangerous they are going to be, you know, come playoff time.
And Carson Wentz is capable of anything. Yes. He could be fantastic. He could be the worst quarterback. He could throw it 70 yards down the field and hit a bot. He is capable of, in my mind, any kind of game you want to name. He could.
He's
he
done
could
it.
Actually,
he's done it seasons at a time. He's been an MVP candidate and the worst quarterback in the league within 5 years.
It's amazing. You know, when it's funny when you look at the standings as of right now. We think the Pittsburgh Steelers are having a horrible year, right? It's like, oh, the Steelers, you know, 500 with a tie, da da da. The Steelers in the NFC would be in the playoffs right now. True. They would be minimum of, they would be the number 7 seed right
at
now.
6-1. They'd be.
And they're
11th
in the AFC. There are 6-7 is the number in the NFC. 7-6 is the number in the AFC, and that number right now is 5 teams with that percentage. So this is going to get just crazy down the stretch. And yep. As we go into the final weekend, and how many teams are going to actually be playing that weekend? Think about this now, because you're going to have possibly somebody's already clinched the number 1 overall seed. So the rest of them are probably already division winners. And then you're going to have wild cards underneath there. But the division winners, who are probably going to be locked up at that point, they're not playing anybody because they have to play the next weekend in week 18. Right. Then if you're a wild card and you're locked up, you don't care who you have to play in the playoffs because they're all about the same. There's nobody that's going to scare you to death out of there. We might have the whole league taking the week off come week 18 this year. And we'll be doing, I'll do a preseason game in week 18 on Sunday night. I can't wait to see how this plays out.
Flex the preseason game into Sunday night football. I think we're getting a little glimpse to like what a post Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, I know he's been gone for a while, Drew Brees, like the post elite quarterback world might look like. Mahomes has been elite the last few years, but he's not this year, right? Lamar has had an elite year and Josh Allen, but they're not this year. There's so much parity at the quarterback position this year. And I think that's the trickle down is all these records, right? Teams with 5, 6, 7 wins. To me, it's fascinating, right? Because I always wondered what the league would look like when the elite of the elite that we know have been there for 15, 20 years, when they're gone, it might look like this. If Mahomes doesn't bounce back to what he's been, it might look like this, just craziness every single year because you just don't know what you're going to get.
As we look at the MVP race, anybody in your mind, Tom Brady, it's got to be, Aaron Rodgers, got to be. Anybody else with a real chance to get that at this point? Anybody you want to pull out of the rafters here and say, hey, don't forget about Jonathan Taylor?
I wouldn't say Taylor. You know, the only guy I'd say is Cooper Kupp. I mean, where he's been so good as a receiver, uncoverable, and you know, again, it's still a pass-driven league. You saw it just like a few weeks ago, Leonard Fournette outplayed Jonathan Taylor a couple weeks ago. We had the same game that Taylor had the week before, where people were saying Jonathan Taylor MVP. He had 4 touchdowns in a game or whatever. I mean, that's Leonard Fournette did that the next week. Leonard Fournette's not an MVP candidate, so Cooper Kupp's the only other guy. I mean, I think Brady's the the favorite by a mile, to be honest, just because he's been the best quarterback from start to finish. He's played better than Rodgers and Kyler Murray. Both Rodgers and Murray missed time. And I know we're always looking for, you know, the MVP moments and all that stuff. With Brady, I think the first game of the season against Dallas, what if that game happened in week 15, right? Brady was outstanding, makes the fourth quarter comeback. And like, if that happened in week 15, we'd be like, hey, there's your MVP moment, right? Because it's against the Cowboys. It just happened in week one. So I think it's Brady. Cooper Kupp's the only other guy I would kind of like sneak in there because he's just been so good as a receiver this year.
You want to take a shot at who's going to win the AFC North? Nobody seems to really want it.
No.
The Bengals make the big comeback the other night, drive down the length of the field, get it to the 20, run it twice, kick the field goal, get beat going the other way. Anybody stick out to you? Are the Ravens in legitimate trouble here? You know, with what's going on with Lamar, is Cleveland, you know, now they've got some COVID situations going. Anybody stick out to you in that division?
No, yeah. I mean, the Ravens, I've been clinging to the Ravens, but if Lamar's probably going to miss at least a game, I think, right? I mean, if he misses this week against the Packers, I mean, even if he plays against the Packers, it's a tough one. Ravens also missing Marlon Humphrey, missing Marcus Peters, of course, for the whole season. But the injuries have just piled up so much for Baltimore. Cleveland has overall just disappointed, but they're still dangerous. I mean, I probably lean with the Bengals, but they just keep having these heartbreaks, right? Packers in overtime and laying an egg against the Jets and overtime against the 49ers. But I think the Bengals might actually have the best shot. Burrow to Chase still is like the great, well, one of the biggest equalizers in the NFL this year.
It's what it feels like, but they just can never, they get close to winning that game. That the reason I know is because we've had them on the verge of us flexing into them on Sunday night. They just had to win the next game and we were going there and they never win the next game. You know, that's sort of been, they're close. They just can't win the next game. That's what kind of keeps them interesting. So if you're picking today, who is playing in the Super Bowl in Los Angeles this year?
I think after all the craziness this year, it's the Chiefs and Bucks again. It's going to be I'll pick a rematch. Chiefs and Bucks or Chiefs and Packers. I think it's the preseason darlings who all kind of like had their ups and downs, and you had these weeks or who's the best team in the NFL, and it changed every single week, and it's going to come all back to the same teams we thought at the beginning of the year, the Chiefs, Packers, Bucks, all in the mix there. So give me Chiefs, Bucks rematch this year.
How about if it's New England and Tampa? I mean, the biggest rated anything. Now the Super Bowl is going to get a monster rating no matter what, but if you got that matchup, people who didn't even like football would be tuned in to see what happened with that one.
Just roll back all your week four previews. I mean, you guys did as good of a job hyping that thing up on NBC because it was one of the coolest regular season games of all time. Like, who thought you were going to see Tom Brady go back to New England and all that stuff? So now you put it in the Super Bowl. That would be ridiculous. Yeah.
Insane. Go home to your kids, man. Thanks for taking a little break in the action. NFL podcast, PFF NFL podcast, Steve and Sam. It's a bit of a marathon. If you can make it through, it's about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Take the whole week, you know, little at a time.
If you could move up the two Sunday night football teams a little bit closer to the top, so I'm guaranteed I get to hear it every week. I would appreciate that. But other than that, you guys do a great job. And Manscaped is always, you know, an interesting part of the show. That's they haven't asked me to do it with good reason because anyway.
Not for everyone.
It's not for everybody. Yeah. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. Yeah. And we will see you on the PFF NFL podcast.
Thanks, Chris.